problems that we are facing in our garden and summer problems that people are facing in general.
Sure. So one thing is that sometimes people's beans, especially their bush beans, look kind of wilty.
Pole beans will do the same thing.
Right. So, and it, like, their leaves kind of curl. They just kind of look, I don't know, like almost dehydrated, but not like...
Almost like a chemical burn.
Yeah, like a chemical
burn. Or a chemical drift.
There you go. And it's not a chemical drift, and it's not that your plants are dehydrated. It's because of actually too much water.
What?
Yeah. So, is that a thing? I guess in some areas it might be. Some areas it might not be. And it happened to us. We had, I don't know, like a week of a lot of rain. And then our beans looked a little wilty. We looked into it. And it's just because of a little bit too much water. When the weather changes, they dry out a little bit, and then you're better.
Beans, beans love the heat. The more heat you can give it, the better you can, the better they'll grow. Kind of the same thing as eggplant. As long as you keep the soil moist around the root system, put the heat to them, they love it. Soybeans in the agricultural world are the same way. But our beans have too much water, and we thought, you know, we knew it wasn't a chemical drift. So then we had to start investigating why do they look the way they do. And too much water. So we cut the irrigation system on them for a couple of days. They do come back, and they'll be okay. They may still have some remnants of the curly leaves issue, but other than that, it'll be fine. Another one that we are seeing multiple times on social media right now, and maybe you've posted a picture of your tomatoes, the fruit being blackened on the bottom.
Right, so when the fruit is blackened on the bottom, that is blossom end rot. It's not a disease, it's not a pest, it's actually a physiological problem with your tomatoes. And so there's good and bad things that live in your soil, in everybody's soil, not just your soil, and everybody's. And there's also a lot of nutrients in your soil, including calcium. And so if you have it's not necessarily a lack of calcium, you might think, well, I just had my soil tested and it's fine and, you know, I have all the good nutrients. It's not that, it's a lack of access to your plants getting that calcium.
Powdered milk, Tums, liquid milk, people will put these in the hole at the time of planting. They will say, well, just dissolve 2 Tums in a gallon of water and water it in and that'll fix the problem. Epsom salt, put Epsom salt. First of all, 8th grade science teaches us that Epsom salt is magnesium sulfate, and calcium is calcium. So those two don't go together, that you put magnesium to fix the calcium deficiency. The reason why it works...
The reason why it works is because you're watering your plants.
Not because... the plant's uptaking magnesium, but it's not substituting the magnesium for the calcium deficiency.
So when you're going to add the gallon of water that had Tums dissolved or whatever, you're adding water, essentially.
You're watering the plant.
Watering the plants. So what happens is then that calcium is free to release itself into the plant. It's not locked up. Then the problem goes away. And you're like, oh, it was the Tums, or it was the Epsom salt, or it was the powdered milk, whatever.
If you do this, if you water in consistent water, it doesn't fix the problem that's on the plant as it speaks. It may, you know, you're going to have the blackness of the bottom of the fruit. Take those off immediately as soon as you see them, even when the plants are green, because that's going to allow the plant to focus energy on other fruit development. This should greatly help the next set of fruiting on the plant. And this is 96.9% of the time, this is the problem, the inconsistency of water. There's that 4.1% where there is other things that can alter the rottingness of the bottom of the fruit, but the majority of the time it is the lack of available calcium being uptaken from the plant.
Right, so that's the blossom end rot. Another problem that people have in their garden, especially it seems to be this time of year, is slugs. And slugs are, they will eat your...
Everything.
Leaves, yeah.
They're the little goats of the garden.
They kind of are, yeah. And so what we've discovered is that they like beer and not... you're not out there cracking a beer with the slugs. What you do is you take a cup or a small dish, a tuna can, whatever, and you bury it so it's level with the soil. And then you put beer in it, and the slugs are attracted to it, then they fall in, And then they drown and die happy because they're drunk.
Just like any other application in which to remove a problem, don't put that beer in the cup or the tuna can underneath the plant that the problem is persisting. Move it far enough away to where you can lure these, in this instance, the slugs, away from the plants that they are trying to eat. Put it 2 or 3 or 4 foot away. That aroma will attract them, but just don't put it right under the problem, because then everybody comes to have the feast, and some of them may make it in the beer and die, and others may find themselves consuming the plant that you're trying to protect.
Okay, so another problem is powdery mildew, and this is typically on things like the vining plants that have the big leaves.
So I've got a list.
You've got a list.
Grapes, beans, cucumbers, watermelon, pumpkin, cantaloupe.
Squash.
That gets most of them there.
Yeah, I would say. So you go out to your garden and it has like, it looks like somebody kind of sprinkled baby powder on their plants, essentially. And that's how you know you have it.
Disclaimer, there are some varieties of squash that have the appearance that they have powdery mildew, but that is just the leaf structure and the color pigmentation that those leaves present.
Right, but you'll know you have it if you go up to it, you can rub your thumb on it.
Right.
And the powder will kind of come off on your thumb or your finger, whatever. So, yeah, powdery mildew, that is something that you can get, and it's caused by warmer nights with higher humidity and then warmer days with higher humidity.
It doesn't allow the leaves to dry off. There are ways in which you can break up that mildew and allow the sun to penetrate. Otherwise, in most instances, the mildew will suffocate the plant and won't allow any photosynthesis to occur, and then you've got a dead plant.
Right. So you can do a few things where you spray it on the leaves to help break it up. Or if you only have it on like one plant or a portion of a plant, you can remove up to 25% of the foliage, and then you can remove those leaves, but it might continue to spread. So what you can do is you can take things like milk and you dilute it with water. I think it's a three to one ratio. So one part milk, three parts water. And then you can use vinegar, like apple cider vinegar. Some people use baking soda. Some people just use water. They really douse it down with water, so you fight water with water, essentially. So there's a few different options for you.
If you are removing a one plant or several leaves of a plant that is infected, be very cautious of how you take that out of your garden, because these are spores that will attach themselves to your hands, to your gloves, as you're carrying that plant over other plants of like variety. Those spores can fall on those plants and start infecting them, and you don't know about it until, you know, for a week or so later, and then all of a sudden you've got another plant right beside the one you got rid of that's got the problem that you actually infected that plant because of transmitting it over the top of it.
Right. So that's the powdery mildew. And then we also have Japanese beetles. We've talked about this a few times. The traps work well. If you don't have a lot of them, you can always just pick them off and destroy them. I know some people do that. If you live in an area that maybe you do have a lot, you would want to get the traps, and you can get the traps from Rescue, which is rescue.com. And you don't want to put it, so if you have, you know, Japanese beetles on your beans, you don't want to put it right next to your beans. You want to put it about 30 feet away, if possible, on the opposite side of the yard.
Also, Phylum Bioproducts Beetle Gone has a product that you can spray that's non-toxic to butterflies, insects, and bees, and zero toxicity to water, and that will work as well. But yeah, the application for the trap, people will say, oh, it brings more insects in. Well, you have to utilize the trap and do it the way it's supposed to be instructed, instead of just throwing it in the garden and going, oh, it's good enough because it's in the garden. There's always going to be that debate. Oh, it brings more beetles in than what it – if you do it right, you're going to see a significant improvement on the plants. What else do we have here? Weeding. We've always got weeding. We've always got weeds. We transitioned, for many of you who follow the program, we've transitioned from traditional ground to majority raised bed. We did the final transition this spring, and we still have weeds. That doesn't mean that you have zero weeds when you go to raised beds. What it means is you can greatly improve the management of the removal of weeds because you have specific areas that you are controlling the weeds in. The raised beds, the 4x8s, the 4x12s, the 4x16 raised beds, rather than a 3-foot wide by 20-foot long swath of ground that everything in the world is growing in, Creeping Charlie, thistles, all of these other weeds that you continue to fight, and it seems to be a losing battle. And that's why we transitioned to that investment of the raised beds over the course of the last 2 years.
Right. And, you know, I think it's personally easier to pull weeds in a raised bed than out of the ground. And
because you've got the good loose soil.
Yeah, you've got the good loose soil. And it's a little bit more enjoyable also because I think you just kind of can mentally break it up and it doesn't seem so overwhelming to me.
And we would weed those 10-foot wide by 3-foot – or 10-foot wide by 10 – 3-foot wide by 10-foot long designated grow areas in the ground – in the spring, and within a month, we could not even tell we did anything, and we removed roots and roots and roots and roots, and it was a losing battle.
No, it was not fun, and it was very time-consuming and strenuous.
Well, what is not time-consuming or strenuous is Walton's Incorporated. Whether you are a hunter-fisher person, a rancher, or you need good seasoning and spices in order to cook, Walton's has everything that you need but the meat.
Exactly, and we're heading into that season where there's a lot of meat harvesting. So we know you care about where your food comes from. At Walton's, you can get all the equipment, seasoning, and supplies to make sausage jerky and any other meat product your way to your high standards. Do you want to make snack sticks that people will actually like?
I do.
Yeah, Walton's creates meat. We created meatgistics.com. It's an informational website to help educate people on the hows and whys of meat processing, as well as a community of almost 15,000 users who will help give their opinion and guidance on meat processing issues. You can find that at meatgistics.com. If you want everything else, whether it be the stuffer, mixer, meat grinder, seasoning, all sorts of good stuff, you can go to waltonsinc.com. Again, that's waltonsinc.com. For more information, please visit thewisconsinvegetablegardener.com.